Have you ever done a favor for a friend, like something you just did entirely out of the goodness of your heart, no strings attached or anything, but then it ends up completely, you know, changing the trajectory of your entire life?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. Just picture waking up one day, looking around and realizing that, like, one small generous act literally snowballed into a totally new reality.
It's kind of the ultimate sliding doors scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you think you're just helping out for an afternoon, but you're unknowingly taking the first step down a completely different career path. Mm. And the stakes feel, like, non-existent in the moment, but the long-term impact is just massive.
That actually brings us right to the stack of notes we're exploring today for this deep dive.
Okay, awesome.
We're unpacking the origin and, well, the evolution of a photography business called Steel Memories.
Right, which we can really look at as a masterclass in the anatomy of an accidental business.
An accidental business.
I like that. Yeah, because we're examining how this really simple act of stepping up to help out transformed over time into a thriving enterprise. I mean, this is a company that now handles over 100 events a year.
Over 100, which is wild. So our mission today is to figure out the mechanics of that specific growth. Like, how do you actually navigate that journey from doing a favor to running a massive operation? And maybe even more importantly, what are the specific underlying philosophies that allow a company to scale up its operations without, you know, losing the soul of why they started in the first place?
Right, because that happens all the time.
Constantly. So to understand this, we have to look at the initial spark, which was back in the spring of 2013. We've got these two people, Dan and Natalie.
Okay.
A setting is a family wedding. And their daughter is actually the ring bearer. So naturally, as parents, they've got their camera out.
Of course.
They're snapping photos of their daughter, taking some casual shots of the day, just doing what anyone does at a family event.
Yeah, exactly. They're acting purely as guests at this point.
Right.
There's absolutely no commercial intent here whatsoever. No business cards in their pockets. No, like, networking agenda.
None at all. But afterward, they decide it would be really nice to create a small photo book as a wedding gift for the happy couple.
Oh, that's sweet.
Just a really lovely personal memento. But when they go to show the couple these photos for the book, Dan and Natalie uncover an absolute disaster.
Oh, no.
The professional photographer, the person they actually hired, vetted, and paid to capture the day, had completely failed. Like, the photos were a massive letdown.
Wow. That is, that's basically a total nightmare scenario for any newlywed couple.
Yeah.
Because you literally cannot recreate those moments. You only get one shot at it.
Exactly. So the couple looks at Dan and Natalie's casual, gift-intended photos, and they ask the unthinkable. They say, can we just use your photos instead?
Wow.
So Dan and Natalie step in and save the memories of the day. It's kind of like baking a cake for a friend's party, just to be nice, right?
Yeah.
And the hired professional caterer's cake collapses into this inedible mess.
Oh, man.
So your homemade cake suddenly ends up becoming the centerpiece of the whole event.
That is a perfect analogy.
Thanks. But what I love about this is it completely bypasses the classic business plan trap.
Oh, absolutely.
Because most people who want to start a company, they spend months, like, running focus groups or sending out surveys to see if an idea even works.
That's right.
But here, the market literally demanded the product from them.
Yeah, that concept is actually known as organic market validation. Mm-hmm. And it is the holy grail for entrepreneurs.
The holy grail.
Yeah, because traditional validation methods are often deeply flawed. Like, when you send out a survey asking, would you pay for my artisanal dog treats?
Right.
People generally just say what they think you want to hear. They want to be supportive.
Yeah, they want to be nice.
Exactly. But their hypothetical yes doesn't always translate to them actually opening their wallets when the time comes.
Survey data is incredibly noisy because there's basically no skin in the game for the person answering the question. Oh, wait, let me rephrase that. The person taking the survey has absolutely nothing to lose by being polite.
Exactly. But Dan and Natalie, they bypassed that entire charade. They didn't set out to do market research at all.
Right.
The market, which in this case was the disappointed newlyweds, explicitly declared that their amateur homemade gift was fundamentally superior to the paid professional alternative.
Which is huge.
Huge. They didn't have to guess if their work had value or if there was, like, a gap in the market. The market, acting out of genuine desperation, told them so.
Yeah.
And that kind of unprompted validation proves that you have a product that solves a real acute pain point.
saving the day at a single wedding is, you know, a great story to tell at dinner parties, but it does not make you a business owner.
No, definitely not.
There is this massive psychological gap between being a helpful amateur and actually launching a formal company. You can't just wake up the next day, declare yourself a corporation, and expect people to hire you.
Right. Crossing that chasm requires a really defined ethos.
Exactly. And that mental shift happens a few months later, in August of 2013.
The incubation period always requires a change of scenery.
It really does. So Dan and Natalie are on a Mediterranean cruise with friends and family. And the actual light bulb moment, the moment this concept shifts from a fun anecdote into a structured business model, it happens during a visit to a water park in Jerez, Spain.
Okay, a water park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is where the name Steel Memories is officially born. But they didn't just brainstorm a clever name while, like, waiting in line for a water slide.
Right.
They defined the core operational purpose that would drive the entire company. The notes specify their mission: to provide quality photography and impeccable service at prices people can afford.
Okay.
But specifically, they decided their goal was never to be seen as cheaper. They actively wanted to avoid the negative connotations of that word.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they wanted customers to look past the price tag and see, quote, amazing value and premium service.
That is so key. The distinction they made right there between cheap and value is basically the linchpin of their entire future success.
Really?
Yeah, because it taps into a very specific area of consumer psychology.
Okay, I'm going to push back on this philosophy a little bit, though.
Sure.
Because affordable but premium sounds like an absolute paradox to me.
It does sound like one, yeah.
Right. Like, how can any business offer impeccable premium tier service without charging top tier rates? It just sounds like a fast track to founder burnout.
Mm-hmm.
You end up doing the exhausting high touch work of a luxury brand, but you're only taking home the paycheck of a budget brand. The math just does not seem to work out.
Well, that is the classic trap, and it's the exact reason so many service-based businesses actually fail within their first 3 years.
Okay.
But if we break down the microeconomics of a service business, we can see why their approach is fundamentally different from what we call a race to the bottom. When a business labels itself as cheap or competes purely on offering the lowest price, they attract a very specific demographic of clients.
Yeah, the bargain hunters.
Exactly. And those clients only care about the bottom line. They are notoriously the most demanding, the most likely to complain, and they have literally zero brand loyalty.
Wow.
Yeah. If a competitor offers the same service for $5 less tomorrow, that client is gone.
And the word cheap also kind of implies corners are being cut somewhere behind the scenes, you know? Like, it signals a lack of care.
Exactly. So competing on value is an entirely different strategy. Value is an equation. It's the quality of the customer's experience divided by the cost they pay.
Okay.
Dan and Natalie realized that if they overdeliver on the experience portion of that equation, so the impeccable service, the customer's perception of the value just skyrockets.
Ah, I see.
They weren't broadcasting, "We are the cheapest photographers in town." They're communicating, "When you experience the level of care we deliver, you'll be shocked at how reasonable the invoices."
So it's about exceeding expectations at a specific accessible price point rather than just lowering the price point indefinitely until your margins completely disappear.
Exactly. And we also need to redefine what premium service actually means in this industry.
What do you mean?
Well, premium doesn't necessarily require spending thousands of dollars on gold leaf packaging or fancy studio spaces.
Right.
Often in a highly emotional service business, like, say, wedding photography, premium simply means extreme reliability. It means being unfailingly kind, arriving early, communicating clearly during the really stressful planning phases, and making the client feel completely at ease when the schedule inevitably falls apart.
Which always happens.
Always. And those behavioral traits, they cost $0 to execute, but they create massive perceived value.
That's fascinating.
So you avoid the burnout paradox by systematizing the kindness and reliability, making the service feel incredibly high-end without exhausting your financial resources.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So they locked in this incredibly smart, value-driven pricing philosophy at a Spanish water park.
As you do.
Right. But a philosophy is just an idea. You can have the best ethos in the world, but if nobody knows you actually exist, you're just a philosopher holding a camera.
Very true.
They needed a brand identity to signal this ethos to the world and a mechanism to acquire actual clients.
Basically, the translation of an idea into a tangible market presence.
Exactly. So on September 26, 2013, Steel Memories officially launched. and Natalie had a very specific vision for the logo.
Okay.
She designed a camera shutter, but each line of the shutter represents a different color of the rainbow.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's analyze the visual language of the photography industry for a moment, because that's a bold choice.
Why is that?
Well, if you look at the branding for most wedding photographers, they heavily lean into minimalist aesthetics.
Yeah, that's true.
You see a lot of stark black and white logos, very elegant cursive fonts, and a ton of negative space.
Right, very moody.
Exactly. It's designed to look sophisticated, but honestly, it can also feel incredibly intimidating or even sterile.
And a rainbow shutter completely subverts those expectations.
Completely.
It sends a very distinct psychological signal to a stressed out couple.
Yeah.
It says, we're vibrant, we're warm, we're approachable.
Yes.
We're not going to yell at your family to stand in perfect lines. It visually communicates that impeccable friendly service ethos before a client even reads a single word of text.
Right. It creates immediate visual differentiation in a really crowded market.
But their initial marketing strategy, however, was dangerously simple.
Oh.
Yeah. They created a Facebook page, uploaded their branding, and then basically adopted a wait-and-see approach.
Oh, wow. That requires nerves of steel.
Seriously. They literally just put it out there and waited, and eventually they booked their very first official wedding.
Okay, the first milestone.
Right. And once that event was completed, more jobs came directly from the guests at that specific wedding.
Oh.
That led to a slow, steady buildup. A few weddings in that first year, and then a few more each subsequent year. The notes emphasize that this growth was built purely on word-of-mouth recommendations and cultivating a base of what they call fabulous customers.
That maps perfectly onto the reality of grassroots marketing for service-based industries.
How so?
Well, in a business like this, customer acquisition costs, you know, the amount of money you have to spend on marketing to get one paying client. That's the biggest hurdle.
Right.
But when you're a photographer at a wedding, the event itself actually functions as your live showroom.
Oh, it's the patient zero model of marketing.
Yes, exactly.
Think about the mechanics of this. You don't need a massive, expensive ad budget.
Yeah.
You don't need a billboard on the highway. You just need one highly successful interaction at a public event.
Yep.
You perform incredibly well at that one wedding, and you effectively infect a whole network of potential clients with your brand.
It's brilliant.
Every bridesmaid, every groomsman, every extended family member is a potential future client.
And the live showroom dynamic is uniquely powerful at a wedding because you have a captive audience.
That's true. They can't leave.
Right. Consider the mindset of a wedding guest. They're sitting there for, like, 8 hours passively evaluating the vendors.
Oh, totally.
And the photographer is the most visible vendor in the room. Guests are watching how you interact with the stressed out bride. They notice if you're rude to the catering staff or if you blend into the background seamlessly during the ceremony.
They're watching the execution of that water park value philosophy in real time.
Exactly.
They're watching those zero cost premium behaviors you mentioned earlier.
Right. And if you nail that live audition, the resulting word of mouth is basically unstoppable because it carries ultimate authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
A guest doesn't need to read a Yelp review or look at a portfolio. They just watched you work under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So when their own wedding rolls around or, you know, their company needs a photographer for a corporate event, they'll bypass Google entirely. They're just going to call the person they saw crush it live.
That's amazing.
That patient zero dynamic creates a self-sustaining ecosystem of referrals, dropping their customer acquisition cost to practically zero.
So the snowball is rolling, and the referral ecosystem is feeding itself.
Yeah.
But this brings us to the wall that every successful service business eventually hits: physics.
Yes. Time.
Right. Once you have maximum momentum, you face a critical choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep doing the exact same thing, which means capping out your revenue based on the number of weekends in a year,
mm-hmm.
or you can capitalize on the brand equity to broaden your operations. And Dan and Natalie chose to expand.
The transition from a successful small business to a scalable enterprise is really where the story gets structurally fascinating.
Let's track the timeline of that scale up between 2017 and 2024.
Okay.
So in 2017, they added a photo booth to their service lineup.
Nice.
And in 2024, they added these massive 4-foot-tall light-up love letters that clients can hire for their venue.
Oh, those are hugely popular.
Yeah. Look at their current suite of services today, though. It's not just weddings anymore. They handle passport and visa photos, general photo shoots, commercial photography, event photography, wedding photography, the photo booths, and the lovey letter rentals.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is. And to manage this massive operational load, they created an expert team.
Okay.
This team is responsible for taking the photo booths out to events to represent steel memories. They now attend a staggering 100-plus events per year.
That is incredible.
Yet the source notes emphasize they maintain the exact same ethics and desire to provide premium service at affordable prices as they did on day one.
Maintaining quality control during a scale-up of that magnitude is notoriously difficult, like really difficult.
Yeah, and this is where we need to unpack the operational mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Because when a company starts sending out an expert team to represent the brand instead of the founders being there personally, the business risks losing the exact personal touch that made it successful in the first place.
Absolutely.
The entire Patient Zero live showroom effect worked because Dan and Natalie were physically in the room delivering that impeccable service.
Yeah.
How do you actually scale your own personality?
You're describing what we call the founder's trap.
The founder's trap.
Yeah. When you are the product, when the business is built entirely on your specific eye through the lens, your soothing presence, your specific artistic style scaling revenue, usually just means working more hours until your health breaks.
Right.
You literally run out of time. And if you try to fix it simply by hiring junior photographers to shoot weddings under your banner, the brand almost instantly dilutes.
Oh, for sure.
Because photography is highly subjective art.
Yeah.
A client expects the founder's artistic vision, and if an employee delivers something even slightly different, the perceived value just collapses.
Right. You can't clone the founders. And you can't easily train someone to perfectly replicate their artistic intuition.
Exactly. But if we look at how Steel Memories expanded, we see a brilliant workaround to the founder's trap.
What they do?
They didn't try to scale the subjective art. They diversified into objective goods and standardized utility.
The photo booths, the light-up love letters, the passport photo.
Precisely. A 4-foot light-up love letter delivers the exact same experience regardless of which team member plugs it into the wall.
Right.
And a photo booth delivers a consistent, fun experience that's driven by the software, the lighting ring, and the silly props. It doesn't require the artistic vision of the attendant at all.
That's so smart.
And taking a visa photo, that's a purely technical, standardized process governed by government regulations, not artistic interpretation.
Wow.
So by shifting their expansion focus from subjective services to objective assets, they fundamentally change their operational model.
It becomes incredibly clear when you view it through that lens.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, because you can train an employee to uphold an ethos of amazing value and friendly service quite easily when their primary task is just setting up a photo booth and smiling at guests.
Yes.
But it's nearly impossible to train an employee to capture the emotional nuance of, like, a father seeing his daughter in a wedding dress exactly the way Dan or Natalie would.
Exactly. So they scaled the standardized operational side of the business.
Right.
And this strategy allows them to drastically increase their event count and their revenue without relying entirely on their own physical presence at every single touch point.
Which avoids the burnout.
Exactly. And more importantly, this objective revenue funds the business, allowing the artistic side, the bespoke wedding and commercial photography, to remain fiercely protected.
It's a hybrid model.
It is. They leverage their incredible brand reputation to book the scalable rentals, while the founders continue to personally deliver the high-touch photography that built the trust in the first place.
Man, it is a brilliant blueprint for handling growth without selling out the original vision or destroying the founder's sanity.
It really is.
Let's take a step back and just recap this incredible journey. For everyone listening, we've traced the evolution of a company that started as an accidental homemade wedding gift in the spring of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
We watched them transition their mindset at a Spanish water park, where they locked in a powerful equation for value over cheapness.
Right.
We explored how a vibrant rainbow logo and a Patient Zero live showroom model dropped their marketing cost to zero.
Yep.
And finally, we analyzed how they bypassed the founder's trap by scaling objective assets while protecting their subjective art, growing into a multi-service company running over 100 events a year.
And through every single stage of that growth, the relentless focus remained on the customer experience.
Always.
It's a powerful reminder that sometimes the most profound career pivots or business ventures aren't painstakingly modeled in a corporate boardroom with venture capital backing.
They're discovered entirely organically.
Yeah.
You step up to help someone out, you realize you have a knack for solving that specific problem, and the market confirms your value for you. The business only formalizes when you finally decide to put a name to the effort you're already expending and build a system around it.
And building that system requires listening intently to what the people around you are actually responding to, rather than forcing a preconceived idea onto a market that doesn't want it.
We are going to leave you with a final thought today, something to chew on long after this deep dive is over.
Ooh, all right.
Think back to the very beginning of our conversation. Take a hard look at the favors or the hobbies you currently do for free for your friends, your family, or your coworkers.
Mm.
Is there one specific thing, whether it's baking elaborate cakes, organizing chaotic spreadsheets, fixing small engines, or designing presentation decks that people consistently praise you for?
That's a good question.
Pay attention to the things people tell you that you do better than the professionals, because the market might already be screaming its validation at you. What would happen if you decided to put a name to it today?